League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. How are you doing, Jermaine?
Good, I'm good. How's the White Devil doing?
He's doing all right. He's just come back from a little trip to Madrid, which was nice in the Spanish sun. It's always nice to get a bit of sun on the face at this time of year. How are you getting on?
All right. Obviously, London's freezing at the moment, so surviving because I'm tropical. So, yeah.
How's the buses been? You've been busy?
Yeah, obviously Christmas coming up, everyone gets a bit crazy. So I'm on the bus driving from Peckham to New Cross. All of a sudden, it's dead quiet. I'm thinking, what the hell has happened? I'm looking in the mirror, and then I'm like, oh boy, I smell weed. And then I have to open the door and look out, and there's someone literally right behind the driver smoking a joint. I was like, this guy must be crazy. So I had to turn all the engine off and said, off the bus. And he's refusing to leave. I was like, look, I'll call the police. And then he kissed his teeth and then slowly went off. Oh, who does that? He says no smoking. They're not even smoking. Smoking a joint.
Well, I haven't been smoking any joints the last couple of weeks, but I have been.
Well,
I've been running, and I was in Madrid last weekend. There was a 10K, local 10K there. I say local. On the internet, it said it was local. It was a good sort of 40-minute taxi outside of Madrid. But we went down, thought I'd have a run, because I needed to do a train session anyway. It was, like, totally disorganised. This whole little town come out to watch. And the first thing I did was standing on the line. Like, I got pushed out the way by this guy in his 60s. Big guy who just wanted to stand on the front line of the race. So I was having to push this big guy. And then they're about to start the gun. They've got the gun ready. And, like, they had, you know, those big, like, inflatable, like, things that go over the top of the, like, the start and finish funnels. As soon as they started about to throw that, that deflated. So it deflated in everyone's heads. So we had to move that out of the way. And then we started running. And about 2K in, I started to go into the lead. And I was following a police bike all the way around. Right. And got to about halfway. And I'd realised I went past the 4K marker about 10 minutes ago. And I realised, I looked at the guy, the police driver, and he didn't know where the hell he was going. And he came completely off course. And we managed to get around. It wasn't that fun. I probably did an extra half a K or whatever. But people were going apeshit. And,
well, whilst racing.
Yeah. This guy was going so mad. I think he had to be arrested. Because Molly was saying she was watching from the sidelines. And she thought that everyone was, like, really annoyed that this Englishman had come in, like, in his Ethiopia vest and his big hair, and had won the race and had started going apeshit. And she was worried that I was going to get beaten up and lynched in this little town in the middle of Spain. Yeah, that
was my... Were they all going mad after the race, as soon as the race finished? All the runners?
Yeah, because they were so annoyed that their times had been discounted or whatever. They hadn't, you know, run the times that they expected. Oh, but yeah, it was pretty nuts. So that was a good weekend. Glad I took the win.
And did you get any pocket money?
I got a pair of socks, and that was it.
Christmas special, or was it just like?
Oh God, no, they're little running socks. But the other thing was, like, I got on the podium, and this guy, like, they were a bit rough. Do you know what I mean? Like, this guy had his baby up there. I didn't realise, but his baby started pulling my hair and stuff, and it was really weird. It was a funny little experience, but yeah, it's good. I'm glad I did it.
So you're going back next year?
Yeah, to retain the title. The interview this week is with Simon Freeman. Hey, Simon, we should say hello before we make a start.
Hello. Very well, thanks, Sean.
Good. And if you don't know Simon is he's a visible presence on the running scene. He is the co-founder, should I say, Simon, of Light the Wind magazine?
Yep. Absolutely.
I shouldn't leave out your partner, should I?
No.
Julie, no.
She's the she's the creative genius behind the magazine.
Exactly.
And the boss.
The founder of Light the Wind magazine. If you haven't seen that, you should check it out. It's more about why we run rather than how we run. So it's I guess, a kind of more of a lifestyle running magazine, would you say, Simon?
Yeah, it is. I mean, the tagline, I think, does a pretty good job of trying to encapsulate what it's all about. You know, I think there's lots of content about how to become a better runner. And our intention with the magazine has always been to try and understand the sort of the motivations and the philosophy behind running. So, yeah, it's about running as a lifestyle, 100%.
And also, more recently, you've co-founded the platform Freestack.
Yes.
And that is a platform where influencers can connect with brands and vice versa and kind of get their stories out and amongst the wider population, I guess.
Yeah, it's an area of commerce that we think is really interesting. It's like brands are trying to figure out how to engage with consumers. I mean, you know, there's lots and lots of endurance sports brands out there, and they're all trying to figure out how to get people thinking about their products or their services, what they make or what they do. And we're trying to help them to do that by finding and engaging with influencers and content creators.
But as the theme of this show is, or this episode is about how we run, we thought we'd take it back to start with and kind of talk about what initially attracted you and what got you into running at the outset. What was the initial motivation for you? Why did you start running in the first place?
The short answer is self-loathing. I got to within spitting distance of my 30th birthday and I was in absolutely appalling shape. I smoked, I drank too much, I had a very poor diet, I didn't really do any exercise. I'd sort of allowed the period from university to, yeah, just before my 30th birthday, you know, getting my first job, working in the city, enjoying the sort of the social side of earning money and all of that sort of stuff and living in London. I'd allowed all of that to just take over. And it was actually just the day before Christmas Eve. And we'd gone out within the company, had gone out as a group of colleagues and got absolutely hammered. And I'd somehow managed to work my way through two packets of fags. And I stood looking in the bathroom mirror thinking, I've got a sort of strong feeling I could be dead in the next 5 years. I've got to do something about it. So the only thing I could do that was like it was an immediate thing was stop smoking. So I did, and then within a few weeks I sort of thought, well, maybe I should start trying to do a bit of exercise. So I ran around the block. I lived in a flat in St John's Wood and I ran around the block. It was horrible, really I hated it. Felt terrible. But being of probably somewhat of a kind of an addictive personality, about three days later, I thought, well, maybe I should try it again. And honestly, that was it. I just was then thinking, well, can I run from where I live down to Regent's Park? And then after that, I thought, can I get round Regent's Park? And then of course somebody then said, well, what about, you know, doing a 10K race? It just snowballs, doesn't it? You suddenly think you go from, you know, being this sort of sludgy, pasty couch potato to sort of thinking, I wonder whether I could possibly do whatever, do a part run, do a 10K, do a half marathon, do a marathon, get quicker at a marathon.
Basically, you wanted to live longer, so you started running.
Yeah, I mean, the crazy thing is, and this is the most embarrassing part of this story, is my dad was exceptionally fit. Like a really fit guy, boxed, represented England as a boxer. So I think what I did was I spent 10 years sort of rebelling against that by being, you know, fat, useless smoker. And, you know, I realized, I kind of always knew in the back of my mind that I was doing the wrong thing. But yeah, it took that moment of realization of standing in front of the bathroom mirror to think, I'm really, really doing myself a disservice here. And if I don't do something about it, I'm going to could end up sort of in an early grave.
And obviously you said you've done a number of different races and events. When did you get the bug for that, for the competitive nature of it? Was there a moment you thought, actually, hang on, I'm enjoying this and I want to do more and more.
Yeah, I mean, there's always been a competitive streak. So, you know, I was a competitive drinker. I was a competitive pie eater. You know, I was always, it was always a competitive element. But as soon, you know, the thing is, for me, when I started running, immediately, like I say, I ran around the block where I lived, and I almost immediately I thought, well, I wonder whether I can get around a bit quicker, because just straight off the bat, you know, first thing I thought was like, I wonder if I could get around without heaving at the end. And then I think as soon as you start getting into any kind of competitive event, you know, doing a 10K or doing a half marathon, that by its very nature, right, is competitive. You suddenly start to think, well, I wonder if I can go back and do it 2 minutes faster or 5 minutes faster or whatever.
Yeah.
You were always competing against yourself rather than other people at this point.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah, no. I mean, I was appallingly out of shape, like really bad. I was like, yeah, can I come not last? That bloke looks practically crippled. Can I beat him? That sort of, yeah. But I did have a really good mate of mine who was on a very similar journey, in that he'd sort of quit smoking and decided that he was going to try and get his life back on track about, you know, a little bit before me. And he was really instrumental. Shout out to Hal. He was really instrumental in...
Hal, we love you, Hal.
We love you, Hal, yeah. We did a lot of training together to start with. We did our first few marathons. I remember I did my first marathon in Halstead, and Hal drove all the way out to Halstead to just come and watch me, to support me. I mean, really great guy. He went on to do Ironman, double Ironman, ultra marathons. He went off in that sort of super long direction, but it was, he was really supportive. But I was definitely like, if I could spot somebody on the start line of a race that I thought looked in worse shape than me, I was like, all right, I've got to go after that one.
Yeah. Obviously, you do a bit now. Do you compete still?
No, is the short answer. there's nothing. So I think that my competitive spirit was very much channeled into launching the business, launching Freestack. The thing is, I'm ashamed to say that. So I ran London 4 years ago. Yeah, I ran my PB in London, in the London Marathon, and realised that I wouldn't be able to train to the level that I'd been training, putting the amount of effort that I had been putting in, and also try and launch a business, also with my wife. The two things just didn't feel compatible in terms of just purely the amount of time that it would take. So now I run for sanity and for fitness more than to try and be competitive.
I'm
afraid to say. I'm slightly ashamed.
Did you ever dabble in different styles? Did you ever do cross country or track, or is it just always road?
So my track career, my short ignominious track career consisted of one race that was the Watford, the 3000 at the Open, 3000 meters at Watford.
Tough race.
I was being passed by junior school kids as I died in the last, you know, 500 meters. It was the most sobering experience of my entire life.
Yeah.
You know, it was terrible. So that was the entirety of my track career. I did do cross country under duress, because after running, I ran a championship qualifying time for the marathon, but I realized that I didn't know how to get any quicker. I couldn't just, like, I had structure to my training, but it's just what I'd sort of figured out along the way. So I started getting coaching, and the guy that coached me, a guy called Nick Anderson, was a big fan of cross country, and he would make me go and do cross country, which I did under duress in the Met League.
Right.
And just being absolutely owned by people who knew what they were doing. It was just awful. But
it sounds, mostly from talking about your racing experience, it was a bit of an ordeal. Like, do you have moments you look back upon fondly in races? Like, have you got any special memories of marathons gone by that you really enjoyed?
All of them. I loved the marathons. I loved marathon racing. I loved half marathons. I loved marathons. Absolutely loved it. Was never happier than you know, turn the start line of a marathon. And actually, when I started getting a little bit quicker, it did become a racing thing. Like, once I'd run sort of 250, I felt like I was chasing the guy in front of me. Now, I appreciate that I was probably coming, you know, 50th or 30th or something. Like, I wasn't actually winning anything, but I was racing the people that were around me 100%. And I loved that. But track was horrible. Cross country was horrible.
Yeah.
But it was necessary. I was told it was necessary to get quicker in the marathon. But that, running my PB in London 4 years ago, that race, I loved every minute of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved it.
Just felt you in the zone. Like,
yeah. It was perfect. It was dry and flat and not muddy. And
so you like a track athlete, but obviously track's a bit too far. So you say road is perfect. Yeah,
because you've got to appreciate. I mean, I just as we started talking there, I did have a quick look on Power 10 at some of your results, and Jermaine. And honestly, like, what the hell? I mean, you're a crazy quick guy. But I started running when I was 30 odd.
Yeah, late bloomer.
Yeah, so I suspect that any fast twitch muscles that I had already completely kind of given up and gone home. So I was never going to be running, you know, the sorts of times that you were running. 3:39 for 1500, is that right?
Yeah,
crazy.
What? That's minutes and seconds, right? Not hours and minutes.
What's that per lap, Jermaine? Is that under 60 seconds a lap?
Yeah, it's like 59, something like that.
Wow, God. Amazing.
So, the start of my running career, I was already in my 30s.
It's good. I know a lot of people like that, and they feel like they've missed out on this whole secret world of running.
But it is open, and like you say, you had the opportunity to try Watford, and although it was maybe a chastising experience, like looking back, like you remember that experience.
And 100%. Yeah. I mean, all experience is good, right? I mean, I'm laughing about it. It was great. I think everything that I did for the first or second or third time, I thought was brilliant because it was all a learning experience. And I love learning from people that are much, much better at stuff than I am. So, you know, I remember going to the cross country, going to the Met League and thinking, well, you know, I'm a whatever, you know, 120 half marathon runner, you know, I'm all right.
Yeah.
And being absolutely schooled by these guys who were just leaving me like I was sat in a chair. It was unbelievable. And I thought, this is great because these people are doing something that I'm not capable of.
So where did the light of the wind sort of spring up? Where did the idea for coming up with a magazine like that come from?
So, Julie and I were running around the Mont Blanc. You can kind of go round the Mont Blanc as a walking tour. I mean, some people do it as a race called the UTMB. We were doing it over like 3 days, staying in mountain huts overnight. You know, so you're a long way away from laptops and mobile phones and all that kind of, you know, modern day stuff. And we just had 3 days to sort of chat about things. And one of the things that came up in conversation was the fact that, you know, cyclists had some great running. Cyclists had some great magazines. Climbers had some great magazines. Surfers had some great magazines. Surf magazines about the history and the spirit of the sport. And we just thought, I wonder whether there's an appetite for a similar magazine in running. And we'd already launched our business at that stage, but we weren't fully busy. So we came back and took some money that we'd saved up to renovate our kitchen. Sort of emailed a load of people that we knew and some that we didn't know and asked them if they would sort of tell us a story about their running, which so many people obliged with these fantastic stories. Julie laid the magazine out, did all the creative work on it, and we spent all the money that we'd saved up for the kitchen with a printer and ended up with, I think, 1,000 copies of this first edition of the magazine. And through the wonder of social media, you know, you're able to kind of create a website and set up a social media accounts and start telling people this magazine exists, and people started buying it. That was it, really. And then, you know, it gathers momentum. You know, so I remember we'd produced this first edition. We were talking about it on social. We were getting the word out, trying to say to people, you know, this thing exists, and if you want to buy a copy. And we got an email into this sort of generic inbox from this bloke called Dean Karnazes. saying, I've read about your magazine, it sounds great, can I contribute a story? And they're like, blimey, that's, yeah, all right then. And it just took off, absolutely took off. You know, I was emailing people at Dick Beardsley and saying, you're one of my heroes, can you send me a story? And he just 3 days later, he sent me this fantastic story about how he got into running.
No way.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. I'd never read that story. I knew the whole story of his career as a marathon runner, but I didn't know how he'd got into running.
Wow.
And everyone's going to want to be interested in how other people start.
Yeah. Especially when they're going to do the kind of thing that Dick Beardsley achieved, you know, he achieved in his career. You know, the how did you start thing. And it's such an innocuous story, by the way.
Really?
He wanted to... He said, when you went to college in the US, the only way to get a girlfriend was to have what they call a varsity jacket, which is like a, you know, like you get it for playing sports.
Yeah.
And he said, I tried out for the football team and I lasted about, American football, I lasted about 40 minutes. And then somebody told me that you could get a varsity jacket for cross country. And so he decided that was less dangerous than football. And the story, the way that he wrote the story, he said, so I tried out for the cross-country team, and I got on the team. I got the varsity jacket, which meant I got a girlfriend. And that's the end of the story. I'm like, you can't stop there.
Yeah.
Like, you're a legend of road running. Like, he just stops there. Yes, I got the jacket, got a girlfriend.
Cool. Life goal achieved.
Maybe he kept on running because he wanted more girlfriends. You know?
Yeah, indeed.
One wasn't enough. And obviously the magazine's still going strong. Like, how many issues are you up to now?
So we've published 13.
Yeah.
We're working on issue 14, and it's roughly quarterly. I mean, this year we'll have produced 3 issues, not 4, because it is a labour of love. I have to say, to anyone listening that's thinking that they want to get into independent publishing, don't. It's stupid.
It's tough.
Yeah, it's really hard. Mm. Really hard.
Mm. And for the listeners, how would they go about getting a copy?
The website is likethewindmagazine.com, and they can order a copy online. They can buy a subscription, and we ship it straight to their home address.
How much of their pocket money do they need to spend?
Well, if they buy a subscription, it's £8 a copy.
Okay.
I mean, it's 116 pages. It's beautifully designed. I can say it's beautifully designed because I don't have any input into that at all. It's Julie, and we have a guy called Alex Murphy, who's a designer. And they're just killing it. It's stunning. It's really beautiful. We get amazing stories sent in. We have a lady called Imogen Lees who works as a deputy editor. She kind of rips all the content into shape. And between the four of us, that's the entire team. We produce something really stunning. I'm genuinely enormously proud of it. Mm. But you know, publishing is a tough business, and so we take the approach that we produce something really beautiful that's like almost like a coffee table publication. It's basically got no advertising, maybe one ad, maybe two at most. So, you know, it's not, you're not flicking past pages and pages and pages of ads.
And if the Runner's World magazines these days, like, I'm sure I saw the same issue 3 years ago. Do you know what I mean? It's not really original content, really. There's only so many ways you can describe how to do a hip exercise. You know what I mean? I don't think it's that exciting. This is actually stuff that's, like you say, getting articles from Dick Beardsley and Dean Karnazes about why rather than how is much more interesting.
Well, I mean, I will not comment on anyone else's publication. What I will say is that because there's only four of us, and we basically do it for love, really. I mean, there's not money swashing around. We get to sort of do what we want in the magazine. And I guess it's like your podcast, right? You put a lot of effort in, but it means that you are not obliged to sort of follow the rules. You can do what you want. We had a contribution a little while ago from a bloke who said, I'm pretty sure you're not going to want to publish this story because it's about why I gave up running. I was like, yeah, of course I'm going to publish that. That's a brilliant story. here's a story in a running magazine about why this guy stopped. I think it's perfect.
Yeah.
The difference between this podcast, though, and the magazine is if someone asked us to sponsor or give a shout out to dog food, we probably would take the money, wouldn't we, Jermaine?
Well, that would.
We are available for hire.
Well, You heard it here first. you know, actually, this is an interesting point, right? Because what you guys do is you create great content that people can consume for free.
Yeah.
So, whereas I'm doing it the other way around. I'm saying, well, it's £8, £9 for a copy of a magazine. So if people are prepared to pay that, we'll keep the advertising really to an absolute minimum. I think increasingly publishers, whether they're podcasters or magazine publishers or whatever, have got to make a choice about which direction they're going in. Yeah. I'd make it free and totally accessible and make it work commercially by having sponsors on board, or make it super premium and expensive and keep the commercial aspect to a minimum.
Yeah.
That's my theory.
And obviously with Freestack now, kind of you're in the business of running. So you're not only producing this content and you're kind of the light of the wind is giving you an insight into the business of running, but now with Freestack, you are essentially at the coalface almost of the business of running. So you're learning a lot about what brands are doing and what they want from campaigns. Am I barking at the wrong tree a bit?
No. I mean, it's a really fascinating... I mean, we actually keep the two things entirely separate because it makes sense to not kind of mush them together too much. But you know, the way that brands find and sort of keep customers has changed beyond recognition. It's changed beyond recognition from where it was last year, honestly. It's moving so fast. But I'm sure it's the same for you guys.
It's just like the new tech. Before everyone was Facebooking, now everyone's Snapchatting. So it's just like crazy, isn't it?
Yeah,
what people do.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's changing so fast. It is. It's incredibly exciting. I mean,
for those people who don't know what Freestack is, like, what would be your kind of brief synopsis of what you guys do?
So we've created a digital platform that has at its heart a community of influencers and content creators, and brands are able to use the platform to access those content creators and collaborate with them. So a brand can find ambassadors that they want to work with for a year, or they can give ambassadors or influencers product to test. But ultimately, the point of Freestack is to try and be part of inspiring people to become more active.
Right.
So, and we believe that one way to do that is to get content creators, podcasters, bloggers to create content that inspires people to go out and become more active. And brands can play a part in that because they're able to facilitate those content creators doing stuff.
Right.
And we want to just be, we want to facilitate the two parties coming together.
Yeah. Makes sense. How long have we been doing that now?
So we launched Freestack 5 years ago, just before I ran my marathon PB. But we actually have changed the nature of the business somewhat. So it's been about 18 months that we've been doing this influencer marketing platform business. Right. So it's all really new, right? It's all a learning. We're still at the stage of discovering what we're capable of, like you do with running. We don't. We're learning as we go. It's very exciting, actually.
Yeah. What interests me quite a lot is back talking about Big Dick Beardsley, and back in his time, an influencer would be Dick Beardsley, somebody who was winning races and had, you know, big personality, and that has changed now. Like, I think people are more interested in stories of, I don't know if that's true, but in the everyday runner, and you see influencers now aren't necessarily the guys you'd see winning races and sort of being at the top level, the UK or internationally. Or do you think that's not true?
No, I don't think that's true. I think what people sometimes want is an either or answer. It's like, so it was that and it's not now, it's now this. I don't think it's as clean cut as that.
Yeah.
If you look at Shalane Flanagan winning New York, that was massive. That's massive. People are like super pumped about that. It's super exciting. You know, we're now talking about, I just read something the other day that Callum Hawkins and Mo Farah are going to race in a half marathon. You know, that's going to get a lot of coverage because that's a super exciting. I still think that is a big part of how brands can and should you know, engage with consumers. Those people are still influencers.
Yeah.
It's just that there's also all these other people that are perhaps a little more approachable.
Yeah.
Like I don't, you know, it's probably different for you, Jermaine, but I don't look at Mo Farah and think, oh, I should go and run a 10K. You know, for me as a kind of, you know, fairly steady plodder, I got to look at Mo Farah running a 10K and think that's beautiful and amazing.
Hmm.
But I don't relate to him on a personal level. But there's other people, shout out to Hal, who did inspire me to want to go and do my first marathon, because he'd done one in 4 hours. And I thought, I wonder whether I can run a 4 hour marathon like my mate.
I'll give you an example. Like when I saw Michael Johnson win the Olympics in Atlanta,
yeah,
I was like, he was a sprinter and I'm not a sprinter, but I like him. He's amazing. So I went and bought a gold chain. So I used to run in a gold chain. So yeah, I'm not Michael.
Well, you know, the gold chain retailers of the world were suddenly kind of, you know,
hate Samuel.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely true. So I firmly believe that elite athletes have a huge part to play.
Yeah.
But there's an addition, and sometimes honestly, I speak to marketeers, and I kind of feel a little bit sorry for them, because I'm like, their workload in terms of the amount of stuff they need to do is just growing and growing and growing. They have to be engaging with social media. They have to be engaging with influencers. They have to be doing traditional marketing. They've got to be figuring out how to leverage the reach of their elite athletes. Their job is just getting bigger and more complicated. And yeah. And goodness knows what the next thing is, right? I mean, we'd be, you know, in 3 or 4 years' time, we'll be back talking about, or maybe even less time than that, there'll be something else. Good news for you guys is I honestly think that the next big thing is voice.
Really?
Yeah. I really think it's underrated. I think people underestimate how valuable what you guys are doing, podcasts, yeah, and that sort of stuff is going to be. I was listening to a podcast on my way to my meetings this morning on YouTube.
We ask all of our interviewees 3 final questions, and they are, the first one is, if you could only wear one make and model of running shoe for the rest of your career, what would that be?
That's impossible to answer.
What did you run your PB in?
Yeah, so Adidas Adios Adizeros.
Okay.
But I'm now in a position where I get to work with some amazing brands who are producing really fantastic products. And thankfully, I'm now totally agnostic and I run in all sorts of different shoes.
Right.
But I suppose I would have to go back to the Adizeros because that's what I run PB in.
Yeah, that would make sense.
And the second question is, what is the greatest endurance performance, in your opinion, of all time?
Again, I think that is really, really difficult, because I think there's lots of endurance performances that are happening like all the time. But the one that I keep going back to that I just think was absolutely astonishing is Paula Radcliffe's world record.
Yeah.
Which is just the fact that it's been so long standing is absolutely testament to what she achieved on that day.
Yeah. So they're getting close now.
Yeah, they are getting close now. But they should be, right?
Yeah, it's been long enough. And the final one is for me, what can you recommend to our listeners? Obviously, we can recommend Like the Wind, but can you recommend maybe a book, a podcast, a TV series you've been watching that our listeners might find interesting?
Well, so I'm a bit of a geek, so this might not be for everyone, but there is a book called Kings of the Road, which is about that period when Dick Beardsley and Alberto Salazar, and, you know, those guys were all racing, which I think is a fascinating period, and it's a really, really, really well-written book. So I think that would be a great book.
Kings of the Road.
My question is a bit easier. I want to know the worst hotel or B&B you've stayed in.
Do you know what? I can't remember the name of it. Even if I could, I probably wouldn't tell you. But when my now wife and I got together, I had started doing a few triathlons, and I wanted to go and do this triathlon down in Seaford on the coast. It was a sea swim and everything. And I was like, yeah, come along. We hadn't been together all that long. So I said, come along. So in this triathlon, you had to rack your bike like really early, 6 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning or something. So I said to the woman that was running the B&B, I'd like to have breakfast at 6 a.m. because my race starts at sort of, 8 o'clock, and my girlfriend will come down and have breakfast at 8 o'clock. And then she'll just come out to watch the race. No. If you're both having breakfast, you've got to have breakfast together. And I just, it's like, what? That was like, such a Fawlty Towers moment of like, just totally incapable of serving the client,
So what happened in the end? Like, did your girlfriend come down at 6 or did she skip breakfast?
No, she had to come down at 6. Unbelievable.
Fueling is important.
Well, it was more important for
not
me.
Not for the spectator.
For yeah, exactly. Then she had to deal with watching me running around in a tri-suit for 3 hours.
The things our partners do for love, eh?
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thanks a lot, Simon. Good luck with Freestack, and hope we continue to see like the wind. If you want to subscribe, head on over to the website. We'll put a link to that on our show notes. But good luck with Freestack over the next few months.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Sean. Thanks, Jermaine. And good luck with the continuation on the podcast. It's really great. Really appreciate it.
Nice one. So a great interview there with Simon. It's always good to think about why you're running. Why do you think that's important, Jermaine?
Well, I think when you always got to remember when things are down and you're depressed, you should look back and think why you run and what makes you happy when you run.
Yeah.
And then, at least if it's not going well, try to go back to basics.
Yeah. Because we all love it. That's why we do it, right? So you got to enjoy it.
Yeah.
I often get depressed if I've missed like sessions or I've missed workouts and stuff. And you think, everyone else is running and I'm missing this and this and that. But unless you're competing at the very highest level, it's still a hobby, isn't it? We're still there to enjoy it.
Yep. The more social you sort of make it, the more enjoyable it is.
Yeah. Cracking. Well, it's nearly Christmas. We should wish everybody a happy Christmas this year, Jermaine. What are you doing over the Christmas holiday?
I'm working Christmas Eve until 1:30 Christmas Day. But I tell you, my bus will be express. And then Boxing Day working again. So, yeah, I'm pretty much working over Christmas.
Oh, Jesus. Not much Christmas cheer in the Mays household then.
No, well, the only good thing, I got loads of presents. So that's fine.
I'm going to be over in Ireland. I'm visiting my wife's family, is going to be cool. I'm looking forward to that. I'm running a couple of 5Ks, like turkey trots over there. So
turkey trots sounds like you got the shit. What?
Yeah, I probably will have after doing those races, but that should be quite exciting. And then back here in Amsterdam for January, which we're looking forward to.
We've got special gifts to give away in January as well.
Yeah, look out for that. You're questioning all the gifts that me and Jermaine have got for you. We've got you loads. Wait till January. I think of all these lovely words we've had for your eardrums in 2017. And if you fancy giving us a present back, give us a review on iTunes or any other podcast provider. Always share the show. We've had lots of people sharing recently on Twitter, which is really helpful. Thanks, guys. But that's a real big Christmas present for us both. If you're happy to do that.
Spread the love.
Lovely. Spread nice one. Love. Right, Jermaine. Let's call it a day. Happy Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, dude. See ya.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.